Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, a full moon for sky watchers and a blue moon later in August. Research on the next generation of biofuels from grasses. And the weird science of hairballs. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Coming up this week on August 1st or 2nd, depending on where you are in the globe, we're going to have the first full moon of August. And for us in the U.S., coming up on August 31st, we're going to have the second full moon of August, which many people will call a blue moon.
That's Skywatcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
Scientists have discovered a biological switch in cyanobacteria that reacts to light and changes how electrons are transported within the cells. The new findings could help in engineering blue-green algae for improved biofuel production. The results of the research were published on July 10th in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture said on July 25th that the severe drought now affecting major portions of the U.S. means consumers can expect to pay more for groceries in 2013. Products that might increase in price include milk, beef, chicken, and pork. They said to expect prices to be 3 to 4% higher.
There may be drought in the U.S., but meanwhile, the heaviest rainfall in 61 years fell on the Chinese capital city of Beijing on July 21st. China's state news agency at first said 37 people were killed, but changed that number a few days later to 77.
On July 24th, NASA announced that Greenland saw unprecedented ice sheet melting at the surface during a period of only 4 days in early July. On July 8th, 40% of Greenland was experiencing thawing at the surface. By July 12th, nearly 97% of Greenland was experiencing surface thaw. This is the largest surface melting in Greenland ice recorded in the past 30 years, since satellites have been observing Greenland ice.
A series of dust storms, also known as haboobs, took place in the U.S. state of Arizona in the past few weeks. During the summer months in that part of the U.S., weak thunderstorms over the desert can create strong winds, which pick up dust that might travel many miles. We have some great photos of the July 2012 Arizona dust storms at earthsky.org. Search for the word dust.
Astronomers say they've detected a distant solar system whose planets orbit in a way that resembles the planets in our solar system. It is 10,000 light years away. At the center of this faraway system is Kepler-30, a star as bright and massive as our sun. It orbits nearly upright with respect to the plane of its planets' orbits, much as our sun does. Prior to this discovery, most exoplanets discovered in recent years, particularly the giant planets known as hot Jupiters, have been seen to have far more eccentric orbits. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Don't forget to check out the Delta Aquarid meteor showers this week. Find info about it at earthsky.org. While you're there, you can order an awesome lunar calendar for 2013. This week's Song of the Week is called A Lie. By the Eastern Sea off their new album, Plague.
We're Earth Sky, broadcast on over 1,200 stations worldwide, including Voice of America. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, a blue moon coming later in August. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. So there are different definitions of the term blue moon, and people love to argue about this, which I don't understand exactly why they love to argue about it, but they do. It's all just folklore, after all. But one of the definitions of a blue moon is the second full moon of a month. And so coming up this week on August 1st or 2nd, depending on where you are in the globe, we're going to have the first full moon of August. And for us in the U.S., coming up on August 31st, we're going to have the second full moon of August, which many people will call a blue moon.
Awesome. So give us some tips on how to see this full moon that's coming up. August 1st, what are we looking for?
Well, any full moon is visible when the sun goes down at night. And many people think that every moon, every night is visible when the sun goes down. That's not true. The moon orbits the Earth. And the definition of a full moon is that it's opposite the sun. So when the sun is going down in the west, the full moon is rising in the east, and it's visible all night long. So both this August 1st or 2nd full moon and the August 31st full moon will be visible all night long, very easy to see. They won't be the color blue. It's not that we're going to look up there and see a moon that's blue in color. This is a blue moon, but it's going to be blue in name only.
And why is it so rare to have a blue moon? Tell us more about this folklore of the blue moon.
Well, as I said, not everybody agrees on the definition of blue moon. And the definition of the blue moon as being the second full moon in a month is relatively recent. In fact, it's only been in the past few decades that people have been using the term blue moon to describe the second full moon of a month. Prior to that, there was this idea that the blue moon was the third full moon of four full moons in a season. And that's kind of hard to remember. It's not the fourth full moon of four in a season, but it's the third of four in a season. So that's kind of a more arcane and a little bit harder to remember definition. And I think that's one reason that the second full moon in a month definition caught on so quickly and so many people like it. But, you know, even earlier than that, there was this idea that the blue moon was something that was very, very, very rare. And, you know, that definition came from centuries ago. It's kind of like saying the moon is made of green cheese or something like that. There's, you know, the blue moon is very rare. Once in a blue moon, it's something that happens very rarely. In fact, if you use the definition of, you know, either the blue moon as the third of four in a season or the second full moon of a month, it's not all that rare an event.
Well, how rare is it?
Well, in fact, seven times in every 19 years, there are 13 full moons in a year. So that gives, you know, during those years, there are 11 months with one full moon and 1 month with two full moons. So the second full moon in a month in modern times has come to be called a blue moon. Not all that rare. Every 2 to 3 years, we get one.
So this August 31st blue moon is the second full moon of this month. When is the next blue moon by that other definition that you gave us?
Yeah. So the other definition is the third of four full moons in a season. And the next blue moon by that definition is also coming up pretty soon. And that would be August 21st of the year 2013.
Oh, okay. Something to look forward to. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. In late July of 2012, the U.S. Department of Energy awarded a $12 million five-year research grant to develop grasses that can tolerate drought for use in biofuels. Scientists will study the grass commonly known as green foxtail, a non-native weed. This grass has been described as a lab rat, closely related by its genetics to next-generation biofuel crops, such as miscanthus and switchgrass, as well as to corn. On the line to talk more about this research is plant biologist Andrew Leakey of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. His lab will study the green foxtail plant. Dr. Leakey, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Describe for us this new research project funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. It deals with biofuels made from grasses. What do you intend to do, and how are you doing this?
Yeah, so this is a new $12 million grant from the Department of Energy. It's being led by the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center in St. Louis, with me as a partner at the University of Illinois, and with other partners at the Carnegie Institute, Washington State University, and University of Minnesota. So it's a big team. And what we're really collaborating to do is to utilize genomic computational and engineering tools to begin to understand the genes which underpin drought tolerance in C4 grasses, and specifically a new model grass, Soteria viridis. And our hope is that we can use that new model grass, which we can kind of think of as being a bit of a lab rat for C4 crops, to identify genes and pathways that we could use to improve closely related feedstock grasses, such as miscanthus and also switchgrass. And what we're going to be doing here at the University of Illinois is a large set of experiments where we assess a diverse panel of these grasses and relate variation in their genome sequence with variation in their drought tolerance.
Dr. Leakey, why are scientists doing this? Why are scientists exploring ways to turn grasses into fuel?
So I guess that big scale objective is really to reduce reliance on fossil fuels, which at the minute are largely imported from outside the country. And then, we're also really trying to slow the release of carbon emissions and slow the climate change that those are causing.
And to follow up on that, why grasses? Why did you choose these grasses? I believe they're one of them is commonly known as green foxtail, is a weed. Why choose this grass as the focus of your study?
So the reason for really picking green foxtail millet or Soteria is that it has a couple of ideal characteristics which make it very scientifically tractable or easy to work with. So we have a genome sequence. It has a short life cycle, which means we can rapidly get it to produce new seeds and cross different genotypes together. It can be genetically modified relatively easily, which is important from an experimental point of view. And then apparently, possibly most critically, is it's a very close relative of some of our existing food crops, such as maize and sorghum, but it's also closely related to these new biofuel feedstock grasses like miscanthus and switchgrass. And those are getting interest because they can generate very large amounts of biomass in relatively short amounts of time, and that's what you really need in order to make fuel. Our team is really focused on how you produce the greatest amounts of grass biomass. If you went out and harvested it, the greatest amount of that dry matter material you get at the end of the year, and doing that on the smallest possible land area with the smallest possible environmental impact. And so that's what we're really trying to explore, is how you can maximize production, maybe not using the best soils, not having to irrigate as much as you might otherwise do, not having to put on too much fertilizer. Those are very important features in producing a biofuel that actually has a net environmental benefit.
Now, may I follow up also what you said earlier, and this is in describing this project, help us get past the jargon a little bit. You talked about studying the genomics of these plants. Maybe in a nutshell, how are you studying these grasses? What are you doing?
So if you think of the genome sequence, you know, it's this, this the blueprint of how a plant is built that's encoded in its DNA. So we have two parents that start at the starting point for this study. They're both foxtail millets. They differ in many of their characteristics. And our teammates at the Danforth Center have crossed these together to get a few hundred offspring. And those offspring represent you know, the shuffled combinations of the DNA sequences from those parents. And really what we're doing is then growing them out in the field, exposing them to drought stress, and looking at how the variation in the way those two genomes have been shuffled together correlates with how their drought stress varies. And by doing that, we can hopefully pick up on particular genes and processes which underpin drought tolerance, and then start to study those in additional detail.
Mm. And the whole goal, I imagine, is to be able to come up with a plant that can be grown easily without very much water or fertilizers on land that really isn't considered usable by a lot of people, which would be good for grasses for biofuels.
Yes, certainly there is an opportunity to take advantage of land that has been abandoned out of agriculture over the last century or so, and put that back to productive use in order to generate an environmentally friendly fuel that's produced here in the U.S.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about biofuels research?
I think what we really want people to know today is that, you know, we have new tools. Science has new tools with which we can try to tackle the drought stress, which has been challenging agriculture since its inception 7,000 or 8,000 years ago, and which is likely to become, you know, an increasing problem this century. And I think that's a reason for us to be excited as scientists, and it's a cause for hope in general.
You've been listening to plant biologist Andrew Leakey. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. Ryan Britton is back with another weird science story. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. So I'm a bit sheepish today. I have a short and gross weird science story for you all. It's a story about a giant hairball.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. This is actually a foul-smelling, giant, 2.5 kilogram, that's over 5 pounds, hairball that I'm going to tell you guys about today. And this hairball was in a human being.
Wow.
This is actually a 45-year-old woman who showed up earlier this year at a London hospital. She had abdominal pain and difficulty swallowing, and they quickly found this giant hairball in her stomach.
Okay, so then what happened?
Well, they asked her how it got there. And she said she enjoyed preparing what's called cow's feet stew. And she actually enjoyed the meat with the skin and hair still attached to it. So over the course of 8 years, she had a lot of this stew. Apparently it was one of her culinary favorites. And she ate all that indigestible hair. So it added up. So
well, that's incredible, but kind of predictable.
Yep. And well, it wasn't the first time that she had this particular issue. So let me say first that this woman didn't have any underlying psychiatric condition. She just really liked the stew. And as I mentioned, she had gone to the hospital 8 years before, with a very similar problem. So she is actually one of the few recorded records of what's called recurrent trichobezoar, or recurrent giant hairball, in the world. But you know, she's given up cow's feet stew for now, and she's made a full recovery. So,
Ryan, I kind of hate to ask, I hate to ask this, but in the interest of science inquiry, is there more information on the web about this story of giant hairballs?
Yep, there is. No, I didn't see any pictures, so that's a good thing, I think. But you can read more about it at improbable.com, or you can view the source report by the doctors at Homerton University Hospital in London at casereports.bmj.com.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Earth Sky's Ryan Britton, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.